C-minus 27. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Clark, having been on his way upstairs, stopped dead on the spot at Dan's comment that they would all be looking somewhere else before Trey got home.
"You really think the next meteor-type thing is coming in less than 20 hours?" he asked.
Dan nodded without saying a word.
"Any ideas where?"
Dan replied by holding his hands in the shape of a rudimentary triangle, thumbs touching and fingers diagonal. When Clark very evidently didn't get it, he added some words. "I have some ideas. They showed me an equilateral triangle, remember? I still think that Kerguelen was the attention grabber, not one of the points, but Lolo undeniably is the first point. So when they give me one more point, the second, I'll know the third. I don't want to get too technical with someone who doesn't know what a light year is, but obviously the third could be either of two possibilities, one on each side of the line between points A and B. I think one of the options will make a lot more sense than the other, like if one is in the ocean and one is in Colorado or DC or something like that. But the worst case scenario is that we have to look in two places. With Timo's money, we could look in 200.
"You really still think the plaque could turn up in Colorado?" Clark asked.
He more or less followed the rest and took Dan's light-year jab in the intended spirit, but this part jumped out at him.
"You don't think that would be too, I don't know, easy-looking? Almost suspicious?"
"Walker has lived here for decades, and more people have looked for the plaque in Colorado than any other state or country. Pike's Peak, all the old silver and gold towns, Argentine Pass, millions of people clearly already think it's here, so it's not like the idea is far-fetched. The devil is in the detail, and we saw how much attention to detail the messengers paid in Salzburg. Maybe they're going to lead us to another Heilig. All I know for sure is that they're leading us somewhere, and we'll be there a hell of a lot sooner than you think."
"I hope you're right," Clark said, reaching the top step.
"When have I ever been wrong on any of this stuff?" Dan replied, speaking lightheartedly but with a firmness that left little doubt as to how certain he was.
"You should plug yourself into your little robot charger and download a humbleness update while you're installing that new emotion center," Clark jibed.
He was gone before Dan could think of a suitable retort. Dan then glanced up at the trend ticker on his wall, which was currently scrolling through an immensely popular recent status update from Caitlin Judd, star of the fortuitously timed and record-breaking movie, The Fourth Plaque. "Okay, guys, leaving aside the movie for now, just remember I didn't write it, WTF is actually happening out there. First Kerguelen and now Montana? It seems like the messengers are trying to tell us something and we're not listening. Why is Godfrey so quiet? Why is no one asking Dan McCarthy what he thinks? And how about this one? Where the hell is President Slater? Like, hello? Stuff is falling towards us from space? Maybe it's time to do something?" Dan knew that a massive spike in social media attention was coming his way, as it always did after a mention from someone like Caitlin. He hadn't seen her latest movie and never would. Billy Kendrick, a consultant in the early stages, had given up a pile of money over what he called typical Hollywood bullshit and what he considered an unacceptable narrative decision to paint the messengers as ambivalent to humanity rather than friendly. But despite having no interest in seeing it, Dan now very much wanted to know how the movie ended and what exactly was engraved on its eponymous fourth plaque. He almost threw up in his mouth when he read that the movie ended with the fourth plaque, discovered after an action-packed and death-defying treasure hunt through ancient libraries and lush rainforests and every other cliched location on the usual checklist, revealed itself to be a stark warning to humanity against emitting certain quantities of certain gases. His issue was not with this bludgeoning heavy-handedness so much as it was with the movie's proposed solution: the expansion of the GSC into a broader organization capable of setting and, more crucially, enforcing limits on the offending emissions. After a few more clicks, Dan saw that the last few days had seen a full-on social media shitstorm surrounding the fourth plaque, with countless powerful celebrities and millions of ordinary users lambasting the GSC's inability to handle its current mandate and openly questioning just how bad things would be if even more sovereignty was ceded to Chairman Godfrey's bloated bureaucratic beast. It had been a rough few days for the typically uncontroversial Caitlin Judd, who was highly charitable
and had been almost universally well-liked before the movie painted her as a GSC shill and before the last few days of Godfrey's inaction and lies had turned the GSC into the IDA resurrected in the public's eyes. Caitlin had been kind to Dan during his appearance on Focus 2020 when he'd been at the center of his own storm, and she didn't deserve this. He typed a short private message of support and almost sent it her way to tell her that everything would blow over soon when people realized that none of it was her fault, only stopping when he remembered Emma telling him that celebrities didn't normally manage their own social media accounts. Caitlin would keep a supportive private message from Dan to herself, but he suspected that her handlers wouldn't be quite so discreet. He deleted the message before sending it and instead settled for silently sending her some good vibes. When he gazed again at the ticker, its new scrolling message was a simpler headline about the geographic spread of sightings over the recent meteor event. Still, no one anywhere was talking about a second flash or a double happening, much less a low-flying alien craft. "The messengers don't make mistakes," Dan thought to himself as he turned out the light and lay down in the faint hope that some much-needed sleep would come soon if he closed his eyes. He had a mental quirk too mundane and stupid to ever share with anyone else, one which involved mentally repeating any given short phrase over and over again in moments of silence, with a different word emphasized each time. In instances when this grew tiresome, which took longer than anyone would believe, Dan's mind would then alphabetize the words if he was still awake, before sorting them by their number of letters and syllables. As it had countless times over the years, the first part of this familiar mental sequence sent Dan to sleep after a few dozen repetitions. The last version in his mind before his consciousness slipped was the best one, with the emphasis falling in just the right place. "The messengers don't make mistakes."